Make sure you're subscribed to Issues Etc. Type Issues Etc. in your podcast provider, hit that subscribe button, and leave us a 5-star review. This will make it easier for other podcast listeners to find Issues Etc.
Well, when you live in an information age, and we do, of course, we should expect that the quality of that information is going to vary greatly, especially when it is amped up by the way we share that information via social media. So the big topic of discussion for almost 2 years now was a COVID vaccine. Before it existed, when will it get here? What will it do? Now that it's here, the questions have simply multiplied. What should we know about the CDC's Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System, a site that a lot of people on both sides of the vaccine issue have been visiting a lot to mine for their own viewpoints? Does a report at that site establish cause and effect? For instance, if a woman has a miscarriage after receiving one of the COVID vaccines and she reports it there, does that mean that the vaccine caused the miscarriage? What about other reproductive issues regarding the vaccines, and what should we know? What do the numbers tell us? Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're going to talk about allegations of COVID vaccines and infertility. Lyman Stone joins us. He's a PhD candidate in population dynamics at McGill University, director of research for demographic intelligence, and adjunct fellow at the American Enterprise Institute. Lyman, welcome back.
It's always good to be with you.
Just for the record, do you favor vaccine mandates?
No. I mean, there's a pretty clear bodily autonomy issue with forcing somebody to get a shot. You know, maybe eventually when we've had more long-term testing, it might be included in the usual regimen of vaccines, but we don't go out and force everybody to get a TB vaccine, even though TB's antibiotic resistant and quite dangerous. So no, I don't think you need like a general population requirement that everybody's got a COVID vaccine.
So how extensively, you watch all this data and these numbers on a regular basis, how extensively are the effects of the COVID vaccines being monitored and studied right now?
Pretty much, if you're at all any kind of scientist at all related to population or medicine or any of these things, you're studying COVID right now. It's almost overkill to some extent, but I mean, every dissertation in America right now is trying to show that COVID has some big effect on the thing you're researching, which is to say that there has never been so much brain power thrown at a problem as there is on COVID right now around the globe. Every week, there are a dozen new studies coming out on, you know, they studied what COVID did to this random variable you never thought of studying. Now, obviously, that those aren't all going to be great studies, not all going to be reliable, but there's not really anything flying under the radar at this point because we have global microscopic coverage of this issue. Everything that can be studied is being studied. There's a very cool website where whenever they get a subsample of COVID tests, they do a full genome sequencing. So you can like see how the genome of the virus is changing over time and in different branches. And it's very crazy stuff that we've never been able to do before.
What should we know about the CDC's Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System?
Yeah, so VAERS is a system that basically nobody knew about until COVID, when it's suddenly been a very big deal. So what happened is a number of decades ago, some people got vaccines and there were a number of adverse events. So one of them is, I'm forgetting the name of it, but it's a syndrome that a small share of people occasionally get after getting the flu vaccine. And so there were some bad events. People sued. The lawsuits were going to cost the vaccine companies a lot of money. And the problem is that pharmaceutical companies don't make a lot of money on vaccines. It's kind of a loss-leading product for the most part. But it's hugely important for public health. So the problem is that a couple of these lawsuits were basically going to tank vaccine production and leave the whole country in a pretty rough situation. So we put together a trust fund that basically every vaccine that's produced in America has a small fee attached to it that the drug company pays. And that goes into a fund that's used to pay out claims against adverse events related to vaccines. and do so in an expedited fashion where like it's a much lower standard of proof basically to get a payout under this program. So for example, we know that vaccines do not cause autism. This is a thing. There was a paper in the 90s that claimed this. This claim is totally wrong. Nonetheless, there are some people who've gotten payouts from this trust fund on the basis that a vaccine gave their child autism or something. Even though this is not true, it exists to provide expedited processing of claims. Generally, this fund pays out lower awards than your classic sort of case system, but in a faster and with a lower standard of proof. Now, where does VAERS fit into all this? Well, if you're going to have a system to pay out these claims, you got to have a way to collect the claims. Now, VAERS does not start a legal case, but when you start to see similar things cropping up reported in VAERS that, oh, a lot of people are saying they had this adverse reaction, it's kind of building that body of proof that, okay, maybe we need to make some payouts basically to keep people confident that these vaccines are safe, or at least that any risks will be reasonably compensated. So VAERS is basically a public database where anybody, you, me, anyone, can submit a report saying, I got a vaccine and this is what happened. There's no verification of it. Nobody's going to ever check and see like, oh, you know, did this really happen? Are you lying? There was a classic case a number of years ago where a researcher was so angry about the lack of verification that he filed some false reports just to prove that this could be done. He got in some trouble because it is actually a crime to make a false report to VAERS, but it's a crime that's not being policed. So historically, there were maybe a few hundred or a few thousand reports to VAERS each year. And then since COVID, there have been just tens of thousands. It just exploded overnight. Now, does that mean that there were tons of adverse reactions? Well, the vast majority of reports to VAERS are people saying, I got the vaccine and I got a fever and I got some body aches. So yeah, because that's the side effect of the vaccine. Historically, most VAERS reports come from hospitals. Hospitals are legally required to report any adverse reaction to a vaccine. Any medical provider is, so are drug companies. So most reports historically have been from those medical system. In the last year and a half, a much larger share of reports appear to have come from non-medical providers. So basically people reporting their own symptoms, which means even less verification. So there's no verification at all. So the VAERS data is basically a public, it's like the comments section of a newspaper, right? Or a website, right? People can submit whatever they want. And then it's publicly downloadable for you to go, oh, what are people saying? It's not verified, at least the public data isn't. And it's not in any meaningful sense like a scientific collection of data.
So just so we're absolutely clear on this, Lyman, a report of an adverse event does not establish in any way cause and effect between vaccine and that particular reported adverse event.
Oh, no, not at all. So like, for example, I got vaccinated in, when did I get my second dose? I got my second dose in July. So if I had then gone and gotten in a car accident, I could have then gotten on VAERS and said I was vaccinated and 2 days later, I was hit by a car. And I could submit that VAERS report. And in a few days, you would hit refresh on the page, or maybe in a week, and you would be able to find that report. And you say, oh, look, this guy got vaccinated. He was hit by a car. That's obviously not causal. In fact, it's irrelevant. This didn't actually happen to me. I wasn't hit by a car. But yeah, it doesn't establish any cause and effect. It's not verified. There's no way to know if these are even true. And anybody can do it.
Why are people worried about how COVID vaccines might impact fertility?
That's a great question. So, I mean, there's all these different things people worry about with COVID and COVID vaccines. And, you know, there's lots of debate about lots of different things. How effective is the vaccine? Is it effective the same for all people or for all groups or for all types of COVID, whatever? And those are all, I'm sure, interesting debates to some people. But for me, because I'm a demographer who specializes in fertility, I'm interested in this fertility side. Does the COVID vaccine have any impact on having children? Now, there's a lot of concern about this among a lot of people for, I think, two really straightforward reasons. And one is that the most famous case of a recent kind of disastrously bad side effect with a drug was thalidomide in the 1950s. This was a drug that was not approved in the United States, but it was approved in, I believe, Germany. A lot of people took this drug, and then the pregnant women who took the drug, their children had severe birth defects, and many of them died. So this was like a catastrophe. And so it's really ingrained in people's head that fertility and reproduction is a particularly sensitive thing that might be something we worry about for safety of medicines. However, while it's something we worry about precisely because it's so sensitive, and this is the second reason I think people worry, we actually don't do a lot of testing on pregnant women, right? It's not like we go out and say, hey, let's find a bunch of pregnant women and test experimental medicines on them. There's huge ethical problems for that. And also, like, what pregnant woman is going to consent, right? I think this is the source of why people worry about this, is they know in the past, there was one famous case that indicated that there could be this problematic kind of link with some drugs. And secondly, we don't directly test on pregnant women for the obvious reason that doing so is unethical. And so people understand that there's not a lot of great information, and there could be a real risk for a very sensitive thing that is very important to people.
Is it reasonable to be worried about how the COVID vaccine might impact fertility?
Personally, I think yes. It's perfectly reasonable. My wife and I were worried about it. We have our second baby due next month, which means that as the vaccines were coming out, we were kind of debating, like, oh gosh, should we get vaccinated? Should we not? And we ended up delaying my wife's vaccination, precisely because, you know, there wasn't a lot of testing yet. There wasn't a lot of evidence yet on effects for pregnant women. And we didn't want to take an unnecessary risk. Now, she did end up getting vaccinated once some more studies had come out and we had a little more information to work with. But I mean, I think it's totally reasonable. This is a really sensitive thing. There wasn't great testing early on. We know that reproductive system can be sensitive to all sorts of stuff. And especially for a healthy young person, I mean, the trauma that it would be to find out that you got vaccinated for a disease that wasn't a serious threat to you in terms of your death, though, you know, you can infect others, but that wouldn't likely personally harm you seriously. But then, you know, could it have all these negative effects on your fertility? If that's really a problem, that'd be really bad. So I think it's right at the front end, it's a reasonable worry if we didn't know anything else.
Do the COVID vaccines cause miscarriage in pregnant women? What does the data say?
So it's a reasonable worry when we didn't know anything else. So back in like April of 2021, it was a very reasonable worry. But we do have a lot of evidence now. There are literally dozens of studies exploring all these different questions. So I guess you asked about miscarriage here. So all four major vaccine trials in Western countries, so Pfizer, Moderna, Johnson & Johnson, and AstraZeneca, were required by law in their various testing countries to report pregnancies and miscarriages in their vaccinated population of women. So altogether, they had about 60,000 women in their randomized controlled trials. There were a couple dozen pregnancies among them, and the rate of miscarriage was actually slightly lower in the vaccinated population than the unvaccinated population. And that was in a randomized controlled trial. There's also a program called the Vaccine Safety Data Link, which is basically 9 or 10 big healthcare systems around the U.S. Link together their records and share them with the U.S. government for surveillance of vaccine safety and some other things. And from that, we've got about 100,000 cases of pregnant women over the last 2 years that we can look at, of whom about 10% had COVID vaccines. And we can look at the miscarriage rates among pregnant women who got vaccinated and pregnant women who didn't. Among the women who didn't get vaccinated, there's about a 13% miscarriage rate of pregnancies registered with these healthcare systems. Of women who did get vaccinated, it's about a 10% miscarriage rate. So it was a lower miscarriage rate among vaccinated women than unvaccinated. Now, that one's not a randomized controlled trial, but since it's consistent with the four randomized controlled trials that we have from the initial vaccine testing, and since we've got a number of others, there's also a program called VSafe that has people register, like does a formal tracking of post-vaccination symptoms, and it has a pregnancy registry in it as well. And that found miscarriage rates among vaccinated women that were slightly lower than what's normal in the baseline population. And then we can also actually look at VAERS. So the vaccine advent, this system I said earlier that's super unreliable, and it is unreliable. But in it, it includes about 2,000 reports of miscarriage, which it makes you go, oh my goodness, vaccines caused 2,000 miscarriages. But the problem is we've had something like 200,000 or 300,000 pregnant women in the US get vaccinated, at least. That's like that we know of. So 2,000 miscarriage out of 200,000 or 300,000 pregnant women is about a 1% miscarriage rate. Well, the normal in the population is about 15%, which tells you that VAERS, even if you think that the true miscarriage rate is 15 times what people are reporting in VAERS, it still wouldn't be an unusual miscarriage rate, which means we have all these systems. We've got the initial drug trials that told us any effects on women who got pregnant. They didn't include pregnant women in the initial trial selection, but some women became pregnant during the trial. So we have those initial randomized controlled trials. We have a large amount of data on 100,000 pregnant women from Datalink. We have the VSafe system, which is about 10,000 pregnant women. And then actually we have the VAERS data itself, all of which tell us that miscarriage rates among women with the COVID who've gotten the COVID vaccine are similar to or perhaps slightly lower than miscarriage rates among unvaccinated women.
Lyman Stone is our guest. He's director of research for demographic intelligence. We're talking about allegations of COVID vaccines and infertility. What about the allegation that COVID and the vaccine makes it harder for women to become pregnant?
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
If you abide in my word, you are truly my disciples, and you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free. Those words of Jesus have been the motto of Concordia University Chicago for generations. We build our education on the Word of God, the only sure foundation for learning. I'm Dr. Adam Francisco, Dean of the College of Theology, Arts, and Humanities at Concordia Chicago, and I invite you to visit us to discover what it means for God's Word to become the foundation of your future. Learn more at cuchicago.edu.
Did the early church teach Scripture alone, or was this a new teaching by the Lutheran Reformers? Find out in Pastor Will Wheaton's column in the latest Issues Etc. journal. We'll send it to you for free. Just click the red journal subscription button in the right-hand column at issuesetc.org. In the Wittenberg Trail feature, Jake Domick recounts how he found the comfort of the Lutheran Confession during a military deployment to Afghanistan. The free online Issues Etc. journal, issuesetc.org.
I'm Chaplain Sean Denzer, Director of Worship for the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. Congregations work hard to keep the Word of Christ dwelling richly in His disciples now and into eternal life. We work to help and support that effort. Learn more at lcms.org/worship. You'll find resources on the church year, Bible studies on the hymns of the day, audio helps for learning to sing our services, and look for worship planning resources to find the latest from LCMS worship. That's lcms.org/worship. May the Word of Christ dwell richly in you.
Lutheranism in the public square. You're listening to Issues Etc.
I think every man, every Christian should consider, at least, the possibility of God calling him into the holy ministry.
Issues Etc. regular guest, Dr. Carl Fekencher of Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Because that's the way that God has designed for faith in Christ Jesus to be spread, for the gift of eternal life that Christ Jesus earned by His death and resurrection to be shared with people by the washing of baptism for infants and for adults, for the instruction, the proclamation of the Word that happens on a nonstop basis in God's kingdom. God uses people, He uses men to be those proclaimers, to be those men who share the sacraments.
If you've ever considered becoming a pastor, contact Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Their phone number, 1-800-481-2155, 1-800-481-2155, or visit ctsfw.edu. November is Military Family Appreciation Month. Lutheran Church Missouri Synod's chaplains deliver word and sacrament ministry to military personnel and their families. LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces supports all LCMS chaplains who serve on active duty in the reserves, the National Guard, Civil Air Patrol, and the Coast Guard Auxiliary. Learn more about the work of LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces at lcms.org/armedforces. Serving those who serve, LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces, lcms.org/armedforces. We're discussing allegations of COVID vaccines and infertility with demographer Lyman Stone. Lyman, we talked before about miscarriage. What about pregnancy? Do the COVID vaccines make it more difficult for women to become pregnant?
Right. So this is a much harder one to test. So miscarriage in principle is quite testable, right? You find pregnant women, you see if they had the vaccine or not, and then you follow up with them a while later to see if they lost the child. It's a severely traumatic event, but it's very testable. Testing if there's a fertility effect is harder. And one reason is in principle, you want at least 9 months to a year of follow-up, right? You want to know, you know, okay, people got the vaccine, then they conceived a child, you know, weeks or months later, and then did they safely deliver the child at some period of time in the future? Now, this is tricky because we gave the vaccine to the oldest people first. Younger, like prime age women weren't really being vaccinated in large numbers until really April, May, June in the US. And it hasn't been 9 months. So we don't know on like a whole population basis what effects there might be. However, we do have some pretty suggestive evidence. There's been about a half a dozen studies at IVF clinics where I don't really think all this research is highly ethical, given that I think that these embryos involved are humans, and I would object to a lot of this research. Nonetheless, they did do this where, you know, they tested if you pull a bunch of embryos out of freezing and implant them in vaccinated versus unvaccinated women, do they survive differently? There have been a lot of tests on frozen embryos, on donated embryos. And then there's been a number of tests with couples who were doing IVF before and after vaccination. Now, these are a little more expensive tests to run, obviously, but there's a couple of hundred ultimately people involved in these studies that have looked at, is there a difference in like ovarian follicles, or there a difference in odds of successful implantation, or, you know, all these different technical sciencey things involving, I don't know, proteins and things. And what they find is there's absolutely no difference, that the COVID vaccine doesn't appear to have any impact on reproductive or ovarian health. Now, there have been some reports that one of the symptoms that can happen after women get the COVID vaccine is their next cycle can be irregular or heavier. This is really fun stuff for a Lutheran podcast. But, and then it returns to normal a month later and there's no long-term problem. And also those effects are almost exclusively among people who are using hormonal birth control or on hormones for some other reason, which would include transgender individuals. So there are adverse effects associated with cycles, particularly for people on hormonal birth control or other use of hormones, but there are short-term effects, like a month or two. So we don't know definitively the final once and for all answer on fertility effects, but there's a lot of research out there that's done a lot of experiments that are complicated and not exactly what you'd expect to see, but they have produced evidence that these vaccines are not going to make it harder to have a child.
Are there any chemicals in the COVID vaccines that might plausibly cause hard to measure negative effects related to fertility?
That's a good question. There's lots of various and sundry chemicals that go into processing modern medicines. But there's one that's kind of stood out a lot that a lot of people have raised, and it's called, I'm going to mispronounce this, but I believe Synctosin 1. It's essentially a protein that a lot of people are worried about because it's related to human reproduction and it impacts basically ovarian health. And if the COVID vaccines had this protein in them, then maybe they would impact reproductive health. And that's kind of the theory. And so this is actually, I've seen this circulated by Lutherans, by Lutheran pastors, Lutheran blogs. This is kind of a thing that people talk about, that, oh, it's Sanctus in one, it's going to cause infertility. The only problem in this is that none of the vaccines actually contain Sanctus in one or anything very similar. And there have been several studies trying to basically compare proteins, right? And look at these substances and say, is there anything even similar? And the answer is no, there's not. Basically, somebody, I don't know who, but somebody kind of came up with the idea that Sanctus in one is all over these vaccines, and they spread it. And it turns out it's just not true. It's not there. There's another chemical that, this one's kind of funny. There's a chemical called luciferase. And yes, that has the name Lucifer in it, but it's used for basically, it's basically an industrial processing chemical. It doesn't matter the exact use, but I've seen some people sharing like, oh, it's the mark of the beast because it has Lucifer's name in it. But it's used because in the process of making the vaccines, it can be traced. And so things that can be traced can be seen. We think of seeing associated with light, and Lucifer means bringer of light. So some scientist named it that like decades ago. But that one's kind of, I've seen people being like, well, the vaccines have luciferase, so you shouldn't take them, when it's just a common industrial processing chemical.
Why does all of this matter?
So, you know, people can make their own decisions about vaccines, right? You know, we're adults. We can make decisions for ourselves and our children. We don't need to be told what to do. But when making decisions, we should have good information. And I mentioned I've seen, you know, Lutheran pastors, Lutheran blogs sharing stuff about Sanctus in one, or it's going to cause infertility. And the problem is that while we can all make our decision, we should make our decision on the basis of truth and what is true. And there's a lot of false claims out there. These vaccines don't cause infertility. And I have to say, this breaks my heart, because at this point, I've personally been contacted by at least 7 or 8, you know, young women in the LCMS who know I'm a researcher in this area, asking, what's the deal? Is there a real risk? And most of the time, they either get one of two responses from people. They either get kind of this very condescending, you know, science is the greatest thing ever response from people, like, why would you even ask? Of course, the vaccines are safe. You shouldn't even be concerned about that. Just get the vaccine and do your part for the public good. In which case, you know, the concern about fertility is just kind of treated as nonsense. Or they get this very conspiratorial, oh yeah, these vaccines are, they've got all these strange chemicals and they're going to ruin your fertility, and it's all this untested technology. And none of this is true. And so I think the reason this matters is because we want to give people true information that they can use to make responsible decisions to steward the body that God has given them. We want to be wise stewards of this precious gift, and frankly, fertility and the ability to have children and carry on the human species, our family lineage, the church, is invaluable. It's incredibly valuable. And so I understand why people would be concerned about it. And I think it is important to address it with truth. And finally, we're talking about the risks of the COVID vaccine. And so that makes it sound like there's all these risks, but it's worth mentioning that COVID itself has risks for pregnancy. I mentioned that in all the studies of miscarriage, the miscarriage rates were similar or lower for vaccinated women. And one reason is that there's a large population level study out of California that suggests that when women get COVID, while it doesn't necessarily have a long-term effect on their ability to have future children, it does increase the odds of premature delivery, low birth weight delivery, poor infant health. This study didn't directly measure miscarriage, but when you see low birth weight, early delivery, and poor infant health, and bad Apgar scores and things, there's almost certainly more miscarriage happening there as well. That is to say, getting a disease that can have you run a high fever and have low oxygen in your blood supply, which that's what COVID does, isn't good for a baby. And my worry is that we have a lot of false information circulating that's going to convince a lot of women who want to have children that they shouldn't get a vaccine, and then they're going to become pregnant, and then they're going to get COVID, and then their child is going to die. Not in every case, of course, but this can happen. And that's a tragedy. Bad information can create that kind of tragedy. So I think it's important for people to know the real risks and the real benefits. And the risks are, you know, at first we didn't know what effect the vaccines might have on fertility. Now we have a pretty good idea. They don't cause miscarriage, and they almost certainly don't make it harder to have future children. And meanwhile, getting COVID while pregnant is a significant pregnancy risk.
Given the fact that the goalposts over the last almost 2 years have moved a bit, a lot, and still move, can you understand why some people are distrustful of organizations like the National Institutes of Health, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, and the World Health Organization? And if if so, how can these organizations help restore public trust and credibility?
I absolutely understand not trusting those organizations, because I don't trust them. I think I wrote an article in like April or May or June of 2020, you know, basically arguing, yeah, we should pull out of the World Health Organization. It's a terrible organization that's squandered its mandate. And the CDC has not done itself any favors. So, you know, I understand not trusting these groups. And that's why, in general, I try to, when I cite this stuff, when I talk about this stuff, I try to not talk about, well, the CDC says or the World Health Organization says, because who cares what they say? They're just people in an office deciding what they want to say today. Rather, we should talk about, you know, actual data. We should talk about, okay, what did a study actually do? You know, how did they actually compare these things? Where did the data really come from? You know, how did these vaccines actually work? Which we didn't get into that one, but I, you know, that's a whole other question. So I understand not trusting these organizations. I don't trust them. I really couldn't have less trust in the advice of our public health overlords at this point. But it's not about trusting the CDC or the NIH. It's that even if you don't trust this organization to synthesize all the research, you know, okay, fine. They're going to put a political spin on everything. Yeah, that's true. They are. There is still data out there. You know, if these vaccines caused tons of miscarriages, then we would be seeing tons of miscarriages right now. If these vaccines made it harder to get pregnant, then we would be seeing a lot of people having a really hard time getting pregnant right now when they weren't before. But if you're like me, most of us, I think, are probably looking around our churches and noticing that there's a lot of people pregnant right now, which is borne out in the data too. We're seeing a little bit of a baby boom in the most recent months of data, which is great news. You know, that's wonderful. So, you know, I understand being skeptical of these institutions, but being skeptical of institutions shouldn't mean being skeptical of truth claims. It shouldn't mean acting like there's no absolute truth in the world. Yeah, the CDC might be a really bad guide to truth, but truth is still a real thing. There is still a right and a wrong answer. There is still fact, and we can still understand facts by using the reason that God gave us to understand the best way to use to steward the resources that he's given us in this world.
Lyman Stone is our guest. He's Director of Research for Demographic Intelligence. We're talking about allegations of COVID vaccines and infertility. On the other side, as a Lutheran, is he concerned that lines of cells derived from aborted fetuses are used in the testing and or the development of these vaccines? Right now, many churches are planning their budgets for the next fiscal year. You can promote your confessional Lutheran church and support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by becoming a congregational sponsor. When your church pledges $1,000, we'll publicize your congregation on the podcast, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. Learn more on the support donate page at issuesetc.org. Don't miss your congregation's budget deadline. Become an Issues Etc. congregational sponsor.
Usually in the Lutheran Witness, we have a theme for the issue. Well, the November issue of the Lutheran Witness brings you something unique. We have broken the mold, done something new. Well, not all that new in the world of magazines. We have brought you a magazine that does not have a theme. We asked our readers to submit articles, and from the 72 articles that were submitted, we culled it down to the 7 best articles that help you look at the world from a Lutheran perspective. So to get your copy, visit cph.org/witness or our website, witness.lcms.org. The Lutheran Witness, helping you look at the world from a Lutheran perspective.
We love our on-demand listeners. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Not everyone is comfortable with new technology. Dial A Podcast gives all generations of your congregation an easy way to hear your sermons, or even devotionals and Bible studies. Once you've completed a simple one-time setup, we take care of the rest. All your congregants have to do is dial the number from any phone to listen to your latest podcast, all at no additional cost to them. Dial A Podcast. Extend the reach of your sermons. Get started at dialapodcast.com now.
Do you want your neighbors and community to see what you're celebrating this Christmas season? Why not display an outdoor nativity in front of your home or your church? It's a great way to show others what Christmas is all about, the birth of our Savior Jesus Christ. Check out the Outdoor Nativity Store at outdoornativitystore.com. Durable, affordable, and American-made nativities, outdoornativitystore.com. outdoornativitystore.com.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about COVID vaccines and infertility. Lyman Stone of Demographic Intelligence is our guest. He's adjunct fellow at the American Enterprise Institute, a research fellow at the Institute for Family Studies. Lyman, as a Lutheran, not as a demographer, do you have concerns that cell lines that were derived from abortions have been used in either the development or the testing of COVID vaccines?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, the obvious answer is yes. Like, it is a problem. We have lots of vaccines that are in common use that are developed. That is, the research and development of them involved cells descended from fetuses. Some of those fetuses coming from abortions. So that's obviously a massive, like, ethical landmine that I'm absolutely sensitive to. And I mean, we should be investing in research and development to no longer need fetal cell lines. That is, ideally, we want to get to a world where we can produce vaccines without using these things. Now, there are some vaccines where there's versions of them that used fetal cell lines and there's versions of them that didn't. Often, this is kind of a very academic argument because most vaccines, when we say they used fetal cell lines, what we mean is when the vaccine was invented 40 years ago, they tested it on fetal cells. We don't mean like you're not like being injected with fetal cells when you get a vaccine. But, you know, like there's a lot of our vaccines, like I want to say the chickenpox vaccine. I think, is it Tdap or MMR? One of those, I forget which one uses one of the exact same fetal cell lines as one of the COVID vaccines uses. Most of the COVID vaccines used some kind of fetal cell in their research process. And it's a huge ethical problem. I mean, in many cases, this is essentially the dismemberment of murdered children for scientific research. This is a calamity. And I think it's important to have moral clarity about that. At the same time, I think that it's important to also have a little bit of moral clarity about ourselves. That if we say, well, you shouldn't take such and such a COVID vaccine because in the initial concept research for it, they used a fetal cell line, but actually we're totally fine with taking the chickenpox vaccine or the MMR vaccine or whatever. Why the double standard? Why is the COVID vaccine evil when the other one that you gave your child to go to school is not? Now, you might say, well, you know, we didn't have a choice. Well, actually, a lot of these other vaccines do have non-fetal cell-derived versions that you can find if you want to. You often have to import them from Japan, and they are more expensive, but it's out there. So I think there's one, basically a consistency that if we want to hold this standard, that's fine, but we should not inflict a standard on the consciences of others that we do not apply to ourselves. If you want to say to someone else, you shouldn't get this vaccine because it used fetal cell lines. Okay, you can say that, but you had best not be holding a double standard where you give your own children or give yourself vaccines that did use fetal cell lines. That's just creating guilt for someone else while sparing yourself the inconvenience. Secondly, I think it is important to keep in mind, we aren't talking about that what we mean when we say fetal cell lines. Harvesting cells from miscarried or aborted babies for scientific research is, obviously this is not a good practice. It's not. And obviously it should stop. And I support policies to impose bans on harvesting of new cells. We should ban that. At the same time, the cells being used in these fetal cell lines, it's not like they were harvested yesterday. They were harvested in like the 1960s and 1970s. And none of the cells being used for research today were ever inside a human. They are like the 80th generation Petri-grown descendant. Now, does that make that first act more moral? No. Harvesting that cell was still, at a minimum, a kind of defiling of a body, of a corpse. And at most, it could have been part of an abortion that was murder. Obviously, that shouldn't have happened. Today, if you're talking about a cell that has never been part of a human, could never grow into a human, if left to its own devices, would just, you know, rot in a petri dish and cease to be and turn into dust. Should we treat using that cell as the exact same thing as conducting an abortion today? Well, there might be ethical concerns with using those fetal cell lines, but it's also clearly not the same thing. It may be ethically worrying, and I understand wanting to keep 10 miles away from any ethical concern. That's wise. At the same time, when we talk about this, we have to understand that there is actually a difference between murdering a child in an abortion today and a fetal cell line that in some cases came from an accidental miscarriage 40 years ago, before many of us were even born, and has no connection to a human body today. To the extent that that's immoral, it's as immoral as planting corn on top of a battle site. No, it's probably more immoral than that because there's more intentionality involved. But it is actually a different thing than harvesting new cells. So while I do think we should be banning harvesting of new fetal cells, and one of the beauties of the mRNA vaccines is that they use a new technology that's dependent on less involvement of fetal cells, and they have the promise of eventually maybe not needing any. We should really be trying to come up with technological advances that eliminate the need for this. But in the meantime, I would say it's a real concern. I understand when people have it. I share it. And, you know, we all have to judge for ourselves what our conscience is going to permit here. There's some things that all of us should condemn, like the abortion of children to harvest their organs for scientific research. That's clearly wrong. That's not adiaphora. And then there's things that all of us should be able to permit. Vaccines in general, writ large. And then there's going to be areas where there's a question of conscience. How distantly connected to an abortion can a cell be before it's conscientiously permissible? And so this is why there are a lot of excellent pro-life organizations that do a really good job of basically producing scorecards for vaccines. Like, oh, they use cells in this part of the production process, but not this one. They use it in this part, not this one. They use this cell line. And they do a really good job of helping you understand. This is I'm talking about the Lozier Institute, the Charlotte Lozier Institute, that they produce these scorecards that help you understand, you know, okay, what does trouble my conscience and where do I draw the line? So for example, you probably don't want to take the Chinese vaccines because they're like produced with fetal cells. Whereas most of the mRNA vaccines are the fetal cells were only used in the initial research and development, but not the production.
Well, in that vein, should Christians in general, but church bodies like the Lutheran Church of Missouri Synod, very clear pro-life stance historically, be lobbying, urging, and if possible, requiring pharmaceutical companies to move away from fetal cell lines and to mm-hmm. develop that good vaccines with yeah. alternative methods?
I absolutely think we should be lobbying for it. So for example, like flu vaccines used to be produced with fetal cells, but nowadays they're grown in like chicken yolks, basically, chicken egg stuff, which is like a wonderful technological advance. And so we should absolutely be lobbying for this. And again, I think the Bush administration banned the harvesting of fetal cells. I think the Trump administration did as well, but I think the Obama administration permitted it. I think we should be prohibiting the harvesting of new cells. We should be lobbying drug companies to change their practices. And also, I think it is good to promote alternatives. You know, for many vaccines, there are alternative versions that don't use fetal cells. One of the problems, however, is that the drug companies would actually also like to not use human fetal cells. Human fetal cells are tricky to work with, and they're often expensive, and they also get these companies a lot of bad press they don't want. These companies don't necessarily, it's not like they use these cells because they just love to use pieces of babies, right? This isn't like just giving them glee and happiness. Well, maybe it is for Planned Parenthood, but for the medical companies, that's not their motive. They use it because in many cases, they don't have great alternatives. And that's kind of the trade-off you get, is a lot of the alternative vaccines, yeah, they are an alternative vaccine, and they also kind of don't work as well. The reason these things get used is because they're effective. And so I think while we should lobby, we need to understand effective lobbying. If we just run up and obviously we should have a prophetic voice of moral condemnation. Also, we should say this is wrong. And what you should do is develop research and techniques that allow you to produce effective vaccines without fetal cells. The problem is that is a technological gap right now. Not all of the technology is quite there yet. I believe it will get there. And actually, the mRNA vaccines are a big step in that direction, which I am so excited about. They really have the promise for making a big step in that direction. Eventually, hopefully, we'll be able to just basically just print off mRNA to give us proteins, and we won't need any of this stuff. That'll be great. So the lobbying we need ultimately is research to replace these things, because we can condemn it all day long. But I think most of our experience of American culture is that if we stand on the outside and just yell condemnations and that's all we do, we'll manage to keep ourselves pure and the culture will move on around us. And pretty soon our kids' school will just require the vaccine anyway. So what we need is productive lobbying that, yes, has clear moral vision on all of these things, a consistent ethic of life from conception to the grave, to the natural grave. At the same time, we should actually be looking for real solutions, not imaginary ones. Just wishing that drug companies would magically have a perfect technology that fits all of our desires and all of our beliefs isn't productive. Rather, we should be, in particular, we should be communicating that we are willing to pay for vaccines that match our priorities. But right now, that's not the norm. There aren't a lot of people willing to pay for the vaccines that are produced using different methods.
Lyman Stone is a PhD candidate in population dynamics at McGill University. He's Director of Research for Demographic Intelligence, Adjunct Fellow at the American Enterprise Institute, and you can follow him on Twitter at Lyman Stone KY. That's LYMAN Stone KY. Lyman, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Wednesday on Issues Etc., we'll visit with the authors of the Babylon Bee Guide to Wokeness. We'll discuss What I Wish My Non-Lutheran Family Knew About the Forgiveness of Sins with Pastor Brian Wolfmiller and its media coverage of religion with journalist Terry Mattingly. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Unshaken from Psalm 16:8 is the theme for the 44th academic year at Metro East Lutheran High School in Edwardsville, Illinois. We engage young adults in a Christ-centered environment, delivering academic excellence and encouraging spiritual growth. Please help us provide tuition assistance to more students by making a tax-deductible gift at melhs.org. www.jkrause.org and click on the support page. Or call me, Dr. J. Krause, principal, at 618-656-0043.
Trinity Orchard Farm is settled between two rivers, showing the way to the water of life. For worship that is reverent, relevant, and refreshing like pure water, or for excellent education in a unique setting, check out our church and school. We're just 5 miles north of Highway 370 on Highway 94 in St. Charles County. Visit us on the web at trinityorchardfarm.com. That's trinityorchardfarm.com. Our phone number is 636-250-3350.